Chapter 22. The Gray Fog of Death.
Orethio Spike's a good one, Bungalow Thump assured Bruner. He's got him in line, aye? Bruner replied, glancing down to his left, where the large Adbar contingent centered the dwarven line, with Bruner and Mithril Hall holding strong on the right flank, King Emerus and the Felbar and Leapers holding the left. It would have been easy for Orethio Spikes and his wild dwarfs to press too far ahead, and surely that would prove oh so tempting to the ferocious band. They were nearest the huge structure that housed the circular stair to the upper levels, the centerpiece of this cavern, the symbol of control of the chamber. And they were wild dwarfs, so akin in attitude, indeed patterned after the Mithril Hall gutbusters, who never met an enemy they didn't eagerly punch, leap upon, shake apart, or bite. The enemy was weaker there, too, in the middle, with the stair dispersing the demons and what few remained alive of their goblinkin fodder out to the left and right. But Orethio was keeping his boys in line, and the long front ranks of the dwarven charge kept rolling in practiced unison. Inexorable, unstoppable, a rolling, swallowing wave. And as they had planned up above, Bruner's end of the line initiated the roll of each wave. King Bruner alone paced the assault, keeping his own formations tight, keeping his cadence solid and straight. Magical explosions shook the chamber from all around, coming in from dark elf wizards or demons skulking in the shadows, and going out from Catty Bree and the Harples. The demons, other than the manes and other lesser creatures, didn't seem overly bothered by the magical barrage, but neither were the tough dwarves, secure behind their armor and shields as solid as the stone they mined. Behind the initial line of fighting, Bruner noticed something else, and he laughed out loud at the sight. Back there, the demons, who couldn't get into the fight fast enough to satiate their hateful hunger, had turned on the slave fodder, pulling down goblins and orcs and tearing them to shreds.
"Keep it slow and keep it steady, me boys," Bruner yelled. "Let 'em eat their own a bit afore they're tasting me axe for dessert."
And the cheers rolled down the line, and the dwarven wave rolled on across the cavern floor. But far down to the left, there came a new commotion. And when Bruner and the others turned that way, it seemed to them as if the dwarven advance, that metaphorical wave, was suddenly breaking against huge rocks. Or huge demons, to be more precise. A six-armed female beauty towered three times the height of the unfortunate dwarves facing her, and an even larger beast, much like the one Athrogate and Ambergris had killed in the mines, only bigger, and given the dwarves flying and dying in front of him, surely meaner. Bruner shouted over to Bungalow Thump, who had scurried back to his line of gutbusters.
"Send Adbar reinforcing to the left!"
Even as he called out, though, a wall of fire appeared down that way, far to the left, down by the Felbarans. One of the demon leaders had done that, Bruner guessed easily enough, and behind the roiling flames, King Emerus and his charges had no choice but to fall back. And worse, all around those two demon leaders, the rest of the horde was suddenly rallying and falling into order. From the beginning of the fight, much like in the halls above, the abyssal creatures had fought as individuals, each taking any opening to leap forward and attack. And so, out there alone, without support, those two eager demons had been easy prey for the teamwork of the disciplined dwarves. But now all of that was fast changing right in front of Bruner's surprised and worried gaze. He heard a low buzzing sound, and knew that this too was coming from the demon leaders, from the six-armed female behemoth, it seemed. Under that drone, the demons all the way down to this farthest end of the line reformed their ranks, suddenly ready to battle in unison. The leaders had brought discipline and powerful magic, and now Bruner wasn't feeling that the victory might be hollow. He was wondering if it had led 3,000 dwarves into a death trap.
"Fight on, boys!" he called to rally those around him. "Hold close to your fellows! None of us are to move out to get catched and pulled off!"
He turned to Catty Bree and the Harples.
"Them big ones are controlling it all!"
"Marilith and Nalfeshni,"
Penelope Harple replied, shaking her head, her face a mask of dread. She knew of demonkind and understood the great power that had unexpectedly come upon them.
"They are demonic nobility in all but title. Mighty leaders have joined our enemies."
"Ye get me down there," Bruner told them. "We'll be cutting the head from the snake or I'm a bearded gnome.
"Huzzah!" roared all those dwarves who heard the claim. But the middle of that cheer seemed to carry on for a long while, a great buzzing drone, and now a swarm of chasmae, scores of the flying beasts swept into the cavern in tight formation. And those chasmae carried barrels of oil, heated in the nearby forge, so their bombs began to fall, and great blasts of biting flames erupted all around the dwarven lines.
"Them two are controlling it!"
King Emerus yelled to Ragged Dane, both of them coming to the same conclusion as Brunner.
"We got to get to them!"
But the two in question seemed far beyond the reach of the Felbaran leaders. They loomed as ghostly silhouettes behind the great magical wall of flames that licked and bit at the dwarven line and drove them back. King Emerus spun and called for the priestess Mandarina Dauberbright.
"You get me through that wall!" he ordered her.
"You cannot go alone," she cried back at him, staring through the roiling flames at the beastly demons beyond.
"Do it," Emerus ordered, "and send others to help me as you can."
Still shaking her head, Mandarina launched into her spellcasting, putting an enchantment upon Emerus that would protect him more fully from the biting flames than the minor protections that had been offered before the onset of battle.
"Now, meself,"
Ragged Dane demanded as soon as she had finished. But King Emerus didn't wait for his shield dwarf. As soon as he felt the enchantment washing over him, he spun and ran off, plunging into and through the wall of fire, and coming out the other side with a roar and a leap.
"Be quick!"
Ragged Dane cried, and Mandarina pressed on as other dwarfs tried to breach the wall in pursuit of their daring king, only to be turned back by the unbearable heat.
"Priests," many yelled, seeking similar enchantments to get them through, or something, anything that might bring down that wall.
And indeed, many dwarf clerics were already approaching the task, attacking the magical fire with dispelling enchantments, a few even creating water to fall upon the flames and dim them. Ragged Dane began his run even before Mandarina finished her spell, and he only felt the enchantment washing over him as he entered the fires. He didn't care, though, for at the same time he heard the ring of metal and knew that King Emerus had joined in battle. When he burst through the other side of the firewall, Ragged Dane could only wince, for that battle Emerus had found was with the six-armed demon herself, and her blades worked in a blur all around him. No novice to battle, indeed as great a warrior as Citadel Felbar had ever known, old King Emerus fought back valiantly, trying to block, trying to dodge, trying to parry, even trying to counter-strike. And he seemed to be holding his own. Ragged Dane knew his guess had been correct when the wall behind him dimmed and flashed out. Emerus had taken Marilla's concentration off her enchantment, and so she could not counter the spells of the many dwarf priests.
"Me king!"
Ragged Dane proudly yelled, sprinting to join Emerus. But then Emerus came staggering backward, and a swarm of hulking demons, many Vrox and Glabrezu among them, rolled around Marilith and Nalfeshni to shield their leaders. Ragged Dane caught his king in his arms and fast retreated. Other dwarves similarly rolled around Dane and Emerus to meet the demon charge.
"Me king! Oh, me king!"
Ragged Dane breathed, and he kept stumbling backward. He soon had to ease Emerus' war crown down to the floor, and as he did, he saw that for all his brilliant efforts, Emerus hadn't blocked all of those swings. Blood covered his chest and belly, with more spilling fast.
"Priests!"
Ragged Dane shrieked desperately. But he knew in his heart that it was too late.
"Ye hold the line," Brunner told Bungalow Thump. "Whate'er ye do, ye keep the flank solid."
"Aye,"
the Gutbuster replied, nodding. He, like all the others around, saw the gleam in Brunner's eye and understood what the dwarf meant to do. When O'Bul's minions had descended upon Mithril Hall a century before, King Brunner had left his bed and charged out into Keeper's Dale. Atop a stone that long-ago day, Brunner had been the guidepost, the rallying point, the immovable object that would not allow the orcs passage. So it would be again. With these greater demons on the scene, the dwarves would be overwhelmed and would die here by the thousands. The reclamation of Gontalgrim would die here too, perhaps forevermore.
"Puent!"
he called to the specter he had sent out from the ranks, thinking to bring the spectral warrior along for the fun. But Brunner then realized his error in calling in Thibeldorf Puente too soon in the battle. The dwarf was nowhere to be seen, and very likely the spirit had been defeated and so sent back into the enchanted horn. Brunner growled and shook his head.
"Come on, then,"
Brunner told Malebritch's Athrogate and Ambergris, and off they ran, Catibri close behind.
"Crossbows up,"
Brunner ordered, as he made his way down the ranks, pointing at the chasme and leaving no doubt about the first order of business for every crossbow dwarf. Along with those missiles went lightning bolts, the harpels trying to blow the ugly creatures out of the air. By the time Brunner's entourage made it past the Adbar contingent, they found King Emerus lying in the arms of a sobbing, ragged Dane. The wall of fire was down, and the Felbar dwarves were into the battle with the demons once more, but not with the demon leaders, Brunner noted, for those two giants remained in the back, directing the fight from behind a shield wall of rocks and glabrisu and other hulking and ugly beasts. Brunner was fast to the spot of the fallen king, sliding down beside Ragged Dane. He was surprised to find Emerus still alive.
"Girl," he called to Catibri, "put your heelin on him."
Emerus reached up and grabbed Brunner's forearm.
"I tried,"
he whispered.
"We're all knowing," Brunner assured him. "Ye kill her,"
Emerus said with a bloody gasp.
"Ye kill 'em both dead, head of the snake."
Brunner bent low and kissed his old friend on the forehead, then leaped to his feet, shouted for Catibri once more, and charged for the front of the dwarven line, his three battle companions close beside him.
"Get me to him!" Brunner yelled.
He leaped upon a giant vulture demon, his axe working furiously, pounding the creature down. He felt the strength of Clangadin, the wisdom of Moradin, the whispers of Dumathoin. When desperation reared up around him, so too did the spirits of the dwarf gods, and his final swat sent the vrock tumbling aside. The dwarves around him rallied greatly, none more powerfully than Athrogate, with devastating swings of his enchanted morning stars. But the shell around Marilith and Nalfeshni was solid, with ranks of mighty creatures, and fight as they may, with the king lying near death, the Felbarans and Brunner's group could not make much headway. Drow lightning and fire reached out at the mass of dwarves. Chasme rained death from above. All along the line, the demons moved in coordination to Marilith's buzzing call. And for all his power and all his strength, for all the spirits of the dwarf gods within him, this time Brunner came to realize it would not be enough. Soon he and those around him were being driven back, and he saw the six-armed demon note him and grin wickedly. She knew. And she knew that he knew. It would not be enough. Catibri worked furiously over King Emerus, the blue magical mist pouring from her sleeve, the divine healing bathing the fallen king. The whole time, though, Catibri was shaking her head, fearing that the wounds were too deep and too wicked. Shouts around her, not from the fighting up front, but from behind, demanded her attention, and even Ragged Dane looked up. The dwarves in the back were diving aside every which way, some screaming, "Poison!" others warning of some abyssal beast about to materialize in their midst. Ragged Dane saw it first, a concentrated gray fog sliding through the ranks, coming straight for him, and with a gasp he fell away, throwing his hands up defensively. Catibri too let out a gasp, but as it passed them by, the fog didn't leave her and Ragged Dane on the floor writhing. Nor did it pause as it continued its apparently focused sweep beyond them. The woman leaped to her feet and followed it as it closed on Brunner and the others. Behind her, Ragged Dane shouted out a warning to the last standing king. Brunner turned, Ambergris began a spell, and Athrogate took a wild and futile swing at the fog as it went past. Still it did not stop, and it crossed through the glabrisu and the vrocks, who seemed not to notice. Then it stopped, hovering for just a moment before it became a swirling vortex of gray mist right in front of the demonic commanders. And from that swirl came Gwenevar, leaping far and high upon Nalfeshni, even as she materialized. And from that swirling mist came Drizdo Erden, scimitars in hand. "I still hope they kill Marilith at least," The fingers of Jaimus Orlaren signaled to his cousin Phyllis in the silent hand code of the drow, as if he was too fearful to speak those words aloud, and indeed he was. "The more demons who fall now, the better," Phyllis agreed. The drow wizards were thrilled at the turn of the battle, of course, for now it seemed clear that the dwarves would be driven back, perhaps slaughtered to a one. But if that victory came with the added benefit of thinning the demonic ranks enough to ensure that Matron Mother Xerath could properly control the remaining horde, then all the better. "Cousin," Phyllis then added vocally, though breathlessly as he noted the newcomer to the battle, a scimitar-wielding dark elf who set upon Marilith with wild and brilliant abandon. Her six weapons spun and stabbed and swept all around her, but always a scimitar was there to block, or the agile drow warrior was quick enough to dodge and quick enough in behind the attack, impossibly quick, to riposte. "By Lolth's eight legs," Jaimus agreed. That's the Doerden Rogue, Phyllis realized, even as he began readying a spell, turning his sights on the grand trophy that had come unto them. He noted, though, that Jaimus wasn't similarly focusing, and indeed was shaking his head. "Cousin?" "Don't strike out at him," Jaimus replied, or more accurately, Jaimus relayed, for a voice in his head warned him against any such actions. "Let Marilith have the kill?" Phyllis asked, clearly confused. "We must be gone from this place," Jaimus said. "The dwarfs will not win," Phyllis replied. "It matters not," said Jaimus. "We must be gone, all of House Orlaren, and now." "Why?" Jaimus could only shake his head. He wasn't sure who was in his thoughts, but the telepathically imparted suggestions were undeniably powerful and beyond debate. If they stayed, they would die, and horribly, the inner voice promised. "I do not understand," Phyllis scolded. And neither did Jaimus, who could only shake his head. "Why must we be gone?" Phyllis demanded. "Because this is quite beyond you now," came a voice behind him. And he and his cousin turned to see Jarlaxle, sitting comfortably on a ledge above the nearby exit tunnel. "Where did you?" Phyllis asked. "How?" Jaimus asked at the same time. But Jarlaxle merely turned and motioned for them to follow, and indeed, they saw that others of their family were coming to them then, looking as confused as they. Phyllis glanced back at Marilith and the warrior he knew to be Drizzt, and gasped aloud to see that rogue drow in full fight now, running to the side of Marilith, easily leaping the sweeping tail of a Naga-like creature, ducking the sweep of one long sword, sidestepping the downward stab of a spear, throwing himself back from the sweep of a second sword. But in behind that sword he came, with a sudden burst of speed that stole Phyllis's breath, too quick for the turning Marilith to bring her other three arms and weapons to bear. He ran his blade right up her torso and slashed her hard, then vaulted over her shoulder, landing with amazing grace, and leaped again above the sweep of that deadly tail. Phyllis swallowed hard, Jarlaxle's advice suddenly sounding so much wiser. The magic lashing out at them from the shadows slowed greatly. The dwarves didn't know why, but the battered, bearded folk were surely glad of it. When they came to trust that the diminishment of drow magic was real, the three Harples turned their focus more directly to the grotesque chasm above, lightning bolts and fireballs brightening the air above the battle. And the front lines of the dwarves were holding their own again. It seemed as if the demons pressing them were no longer covering for each other or working in unison. It didn't take long for the dwarves of Felbar to understand why, and their cries of Drizzt were taken up by the Adbarim and echoed all the way to the other end of the line to Brunner's clan. Every dwarf tried to get a glance at the brilliant battle, at Drizzt and the six-armed she-demon, eight weapons ringing in a continual song. Or to the side of that titanic battle, to get a glance at the legendary Black Panther, raking and biting, taking brutal hits from the huge demon and tearing its gray skin into loose flaps in reply. "Huzzah and hey-ho!" became the call once more as the dwarves rallied, and none greater than Brunner Battlehammer and his entourage of three, leaping about each other and swatting at a Glabrezu, determined to clear the way and get to the side of the Dark Elf Ranger. Drizzt saw none of that, heard none of the cheers, and didn't even register the battle right beside him where Gwenivar and Nalfeshni traded such brutal strikes. His focus was narrow and fully on the six-armed demon. He was not unfamiliar with this particular type of beast, for he had battled a Marilith before in another time and place. But not Marilith herself, not this creature so huge and powerful. He had come in with the element of surprise, had been upon the demon before she even knew he was there, had struck hard and true with both his blades, the repaired Twinkle, and Icing Death, the Frostbrand, which feasted on the flesh of creatures of fire in the lower plains. That advantage had proved short-lived, however, and now Drizzt found himself in the fight of his life against a foe mighty and indomitable and unshakable. His focus was perfect because it had to be perfect, because anything less than that would get him cut down in short order. His body moved somewhere beyond simple consciousness, in some almost ethereal state, where conscious thought simply could not keep up. He was the hunter, because to be anything less was to be dead. His blades moved as they had to move to intercept and deflect deadly strikes. His legs propelled him to and fro just ahead of strikes. It was all a blur to him, and to those watching, surely, as he just let himself flow with the battle, let the sounds and movements, the smells and the rush of air even, guide him along. Conscious thought was his enemy. Even considering the motions and consciously trying to anticipate the next would get him killed. He just let the battle flow, trusting his instincts and reactions without thinking of them at all. Somehow he had not been hit, though 100 strikes had come his way. Somehow he did not tire. Because he could not tire. Somehow. The bulky winged demon could not begin to keep up with the sheer speed of Guinevere's movements, and even the beast's thick hide could only partly deter those incessantly raking claws. Again and again, Nalfeshni slapped a huge hand to try to catch the cat, and almost always wound up just hitting himself. And on those few occasions when the demon managed to get some grasp on the elusive panther, quick as lightning, Guinevere spun about and bit a demon finger hard. But these two demon leaders were not mere warriors, brilliant as they were in combat, and for all the tribulations of the early battle, Nalfeshni was more frustrated than worried. And so the abyssal behemoth drew a cymbal in the air, chanting guttural sounds to enact the magic. The glowing cymbal hung in front of the beast, and even those dwarves battling the demon line, and those in the ranks behind, had to shy and squint, the unholy power of the magical cymbal stinging them and burning them. For Drizzt and Guinevere, the effect was more pronounced, and the panther issued an agonized growl, and the drow ranger fell back from Marilith and lurched over in pain. So it was that both personal battles would have ended right there, with the major demons crushing their puny enemies. But in just a few heartbeats, a shimmering wave rolled back and forth around the combatants, and the demonic symbol sparked and disappeared. One woman stood tall against the unholy power. Behind the initial dwarven shield wall, behind her adoptive father and his battling entourage, Catti Bree would not be bowed by demonic magic. She stood with her silvery staff upraised, the blue sapphire glowing fiercely, throwing forth disenchanting waves inhibiting the abyssal magic. And so when Nalfeshni paused to consider her, a relieved Guinevere leaped upon the beast's massive shoulder and bit down hard, igniting a fountain of demon blood. And when Marilith moved forward fast to bury the lurching Drizzt, he came up straight in front of her and fast turned the tables, driving her back yet again with flashing ripostes.
"Ah, good girl!" Brunner congratulated her, and he and Athrogate worked in powerful unison to topple yet another Vrock,
the black-bearded dwarf hardly pausing to consider the win before sweeping out his morning stars to swat away another trio of manes.
"Wahaha!" he roared happily. "We're coming, Drizzle Elf! You just hold your ground!"
Brunner looked to Catti Bree, thinking to ask her for some evocations of her own to help blast clear the way to the drow and his cat, but he found the woman fully engaged, looking at Drizzt, her stare purely focused as if she were expecting some signal. Catti Bree knew her husband better than any, and understood the flow of the battle he now waged, and so indeed she was looking for a specific cue. Drizzt had battled a Marilith before, and he knew one great trick this demon could play, a quick teleport spell to land her behind her opponent. He knew too the disenchantment that had come over the area, and understood the source of it. So when Marilith came at him only to find him relieved of his pain and ready to counter, then found herself in a desperate backslide, Drizzt guessed what to expect. The huge demon hissed and brought all of her blades in for complete parries, then threw them out wide, rearing away from Drizzt and thinking to teleport behind him. But she could not, and so he got her with a sudden leap and thrust, icing death puncturing her belly and chewing hungrily at her life force. The demon went into a berserk rage, driving Drizzt back, three arms sweeping across one way, then back again, followed by the other three with the cruel weapons they held. Around came her snake-like tail, trying to sweep the feet from the drow, and he only barely stayed ahead of the sudden, brutal assault. And in one dodge, he glanced back and caught an opening in the demon-on-dwarf battle to catch a glimpse of Catti Bree. He found her staring back. He only had time to offer a slight nod, but that was all she needed. Drizzt sped out to the side and reached into his innate drow magic. Purple flames of fairy fire covered the demon. Marilith's own magic suppressed that almost immediately, but Drizzt hadn't evoked the Dwyamer for any reason other than to verify that he could, that Catti Bree had correctly dismissed her disenchanting wave. Marilith came on, and Drizzt stopped running away, turning back to her and charging abruptly. He led with a globe of impenetrable darkness, covering the huge demon, and into it he sped. Even as his vision failed him, he heard the cries, the collective gasp from his friends and allies behind. It was a daring move, to be sure, and never in his life before had Drizzt put this much trust in his anticipation of his opponent's actions. And in truth, he didn't really know where that anticipation had come from. How could he know? But yet again, this was not conscious thought guiding him, only instinct and confidence and trust. He just knew that Marilith was already moving to counter. Perhaps it was the press of the air, the tiny currents from her arms and blades. She was leading with her left arms, and so her left hip was forward, and in that pose her blades would come across up high. And so Drizzt fell flat to the floor and felt the rush of air above him. He was up almost instantly and knew the backhand follow was coming fast, and from all the little things he had just subconsciously noted in the last back and forth of battle, he knew, too, that Marilith would be shifting her left hip to an even posture, and as he understood her general positioning, so too must she know his. So he leaped and turned horizontally in the air, and Marilith's low blade went beneath him, scraping the floor, and her middle blade, too, was too low, but perilously close. The third blade slashed across so near to his face that if Drizzt hadn't wisely turned his head, it would have taken his nose. He rolled as he descended, even as the blades passed, twisting, driving his legs down, catching the floor in a crouch. Three more blades were right behind, but Drizzt went forward still, springing forth inside the demon's reach. Springing forth with one scimitar out in front of him, one blade hungry for demon flesh. He felt icing death enter the demon's skin in the hollow between her breasts, and he kept going forward, and the material body of the abyssal creature could not resist or repel the bite of the frostbrand. The howl filled the vast cavern. From behind the dwarves, Catti Bree cried out in fear. On a ledge above Phyllis and Gyamus, very near to the lower exit, Jarlaxle too cried out, seeing Drizzt leap into that darkened globe where Marilith surely waited.
Elf!
Brunner cried, and he and all around him held their collective breath in the agonizing heartbeat it took for the combatants to clear the darkness globe. Marilith charged in a frenzy, Drizzt up against her. She bit at him and slapped at him, tried to turn her weapons and stab at him, and it seemed impossible that he had not been badly hit yet, and it was impossible that he would not soon be, particularly when Marilith threw aside a pair of her weapons and hugged him tight.
Elf!
Brunner cried again, and he started to add,
Girl!
But Catti Bree didn't need the prompt. With no other choice, she had already raised her staff to the demon and let fly a great forked lightning bolt, one that hit both Marilith and Drizzt, a stunning, jolting blast that rocked the demon back over her serpentine tail and sent Drizzt tumbling and flying from her grasp. The agile drow hit the ground in a roll and came up spinning back in a defensive crouch to face the demon, neither of his blades in hand. Icing death ate at the demon, but not quickly enough, and on she came.
but an axe, an old many-notched axe, newly reforged in this very place and burning with the enchantment of flames, appeared spinning out of nowhere to embed itself deeply into the face of the great six-armed demon. Marilith stared at Drizzt hatefully from either side of that battle axe. She held there, leaning back over her snake tail, her other weapons falling from her grasp, her hands reaching for the hilt of the scimitar that was buried deep in her chest. She wanted to grab it and tear it free, but she simply could not. Icing Death 8.
"By the goddess," said Phyllis Orlaren, shaking his head in disbelief.
He and his cousin looked up at Jarlaxle to find him smiling widely and nodding knowingly. He sensed their looks and held out his hand, inviting them to note that Drizzt was already on to other things, though Marilith remained in place. In his role in Rise, he had replaced his scimitars with his bow, the deadly Heartseeker, and now took a bead on the other demon behemoth. The panther leaped up from Nalfeshni straight into the air. The demon reached high and roared. An arrow entered Nalfeshni's mouth. A second, following before the first ever struck, entered the demon's left eye, and a third took Nalfeshni in the right eye. Drizzt had to be perfect, and so he was perfect, and Guinevar dropped upon the demon's head and shoulders and tore mercilessly at the flesh. Marilith shrieked again in protest, but she was still leaning back over her tail, and even farther now, and she simply collapsed, acrid smoke, her life's essence flowing from the wound around the hilt of Icing Death, her body withering, her essence retreating to the abyss in true banishment.
"What do we do?"
Jaimus Orlaren asked Jarlaxle, who glanced down from his perch, seeming quite amused.
"You go to Matron Mother Xerith and tell her that the cavern is lost," an unexpected voice answered, as Kimuriel Oplodra walked out of that exit tunnel to stand beside the two wizards. Jarlaxle looked back to the battle, where the coordination of the demon line was already beginning to fail, the dwarves rallying, and Drizzt cutting down everything near to him with a volley of silver-streaking arrows. He looked at the smoking husk that had been Marilith, Drizzt's scimitar protruding from her withered chest, King Brunner's axe creasing her once beautiful face. Jarlaxle could not disagree with Camuriel's assessment. Indeed, the rout was on once more. As it progressed, as more and more of the drow abandoned the cavern, as demons turned on demons in a mob of senseless murder and frenzy, Jarlaxle looked to Camuriel.
"Methinks it is time that we too are gone from this place," he said. He smiled widely. This was the outcome he preferred.
"Long pastime," Kimuriel agreed. The psionicist was not nearly as interested in this battle as Jarlaxle was, of course, and mostly because he had another matter to attend, one where he would at long last impart the last pieces of the powerful summoning to the Archmage, who would unintentionally free his mother. So he errantly believed.